This is Radio EcoShock.
As we've just found out, deep-sea oil drilling is risky business. Now there is a new danger in the Gulf of Mexico, methane leaking under the sea. Dr. Michael Hirschfield is chief scientist at Oceana, the well-known international voice for the world's oceans. In the middle of June, he testified to a congressional committee about the risks of deep-sea drilling. Dr. Hirschfield, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Glad to be here.
First of all, I listened to your testimony to the House of Representatives. You gave them three recommendations from Oceana when it comes to the deep sea oil industry. Can you tell us about those?
Yes. We fundamentally think that the day of oil drilling offshore has come and gone, and that we need to move beyond offshore drilling to a new carbon-free energy economy. And so we think it's critical for the administration and for Congress to put a stop to new offshore drilling. And we think it's critical for the administration and Congress to move on to get serious about conservation and new sources of energy like offshore wind and solar.
It makes sense to me. I want, though, really to talk to you today about this new wrinkle in this ever-expanding disaster, it seems to me. Scientists are deeply worried about the impacts of methane on sea life. BP estimates about 40% of the flow we see on those ROV cameras is not oil, but natural gas or methane. Considering the huge volume, I wonder if this is one of the single biggest methane releases on the planet in modern times. What would your opinion be on that?
From everything that I've read, I would have to agree. It looks like it may well be more methane coming up from a single spot than we've seen at any other time in history.
Beats out even those leaking Russian natural gas pipelines, I would say. Can you walk us through what happens to the methane escaping in those deep sea conditions?
Yeah, I mean, what we tend to forget is that although methane is a gas in room temperature or in your furnace, down a mile below the seafloor, it's under incredible pressure and it's very cold. So it's behaving a bit differently, and it's actually not just quickly bubbling out of the water like you might expect in seltzer or something like that. It's actually dissolving in the water. And one of the things that scientists are learning is that the behavior of oil, the behavior of natural gas, and particularly methane at the bottom of the deep sea is different from what we're used to seeing when we see a tanker spill or something in very shallow water. So the methane's becoming dissolved, and it's becoming dissolved in concentrations that many scientists say are higher than they've ever seen before.
Before we get to the impacts on sea life under there, I'm wondering, does some of this methane escape as far as the surface where it could become a serious greenhouse warming gas?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes, some of the methane is certainly escaping to the atmosphere. And when it does, all of the science tells us that methane is a very serious greenhouse gas. One of the big open questions right now is what fraction of the methane that's bubbling up from the seafloor actually ends up in the water versus how much is ending up escaping to the atmosphere.
I guess that may be what Dr. John Kessler from Texas A&M is heading out there to measure right now.
Yes, I think there's a lot of interest in this. One of the things, as you said at the beginning, every day we learn something new and different about the consequences of a horrendous leak or crack in the world's crust that's spewing out oil and natural gas and its consequences to the sea. Unfortunately, it's an unprecedented experiment, and so far all of the results of the experiment are bad.
Well, we do know that some of that methane will freeze into that slush called clathrates on the seafloor, but that could be released later again if the Gulf water's warm enough.
Yes, exactly. It's these slushy methane compounds are not particularly stable. And so actually one of the concerns about global warming generally is the release of methane from these melting methane clathrates.
Let's get to the immediate worry, which is, I think, the impact of all this natural gas or the methane on undersea marine life. What do we know about that?
I mean, the interesting thing is we know very little about methane toxicity itself. I am unaware of any studies where anybody has tested the, you know, sort of the acute toxicity or even if methane is toxic at all to marine life. What we do know is that methane is a dandy food source for bacteria. And what that means is the bacteria are going to break it down to use it for energy. But unfortunately, in so doing, they use oxygen just like we do when we metabolize food. And if you have really high concentrations of methane and really fast action from bacteria, that runs the risk of reducing oxygen levels in the water column to levels that can no longer support life.
And I guess the X factor in that is we don't know what these dispersants will do to that mix.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tempting for scientists to look at single factors. So it's really tempting to say, okay, so what's the consequence of the methane? And then somebody else to say, so what's the consequence of the dispersant? Somebody else to say, what about the toxicity from the oil? But what we really need to recognize is that all of this is happening together, and there's a dilute toxic soup down there with dispersants and high levels of methane and a certain amount of oil. So you're potentially stressing any, you know, particularly the bottom-dwelling organisms that can't swim away, you're subjecting these organisms to toxicity at the same time that they may not be getting enough oxygen.
Well, let's say that the oxygen is reduced. What kinds of creatures could suffer the most?
Really, what we've seen in other areas where you end up with reduced dissolved oxygen levels is many of the seafloor invertebrates, the corals, the sponges, the shellfish of almost any kind are going to be directly affected because they can't swim away. Many of them may be able to survive for a short period of time with low oxygen levels, but ultimately it can be fatal. And then there are the organisms that, you know, need to be in particular places, particular depths or particular temperatures to feed. So it could be something like squid or dolphins or porpoises or whales. They may naturally want to swim into a certain area because that's where their food ordinarily would be. If the oxygen levels are too low, they're going to avoid them.
You know, I thought that we would have a really good knowledge of the undersea life in the Gulf, considering all the environmental assessments that must have been done, but now we find out that really isn't the case, and we don't have the resources to track undersea life very well. Do you think it's fair to say we may never know the full impact of this leak on sea life in the Gulf of Mexico?
I think it's 100% certain that we will never know the true impacts of this disaster on undersea life. One of the things that, as you just said, you know, we know the Gulf about as well as anywhere, and the list of things that we don't know about the Gulf would fill many, many more textbooks than the things that we do know. And what we're learning now is not only do we really not know what's down there or how they interrelate when there isn't oil around, we know even less about what happens when you subject the Gulf ecosystem to oil and natural gas. And that's one of the main reasons why Oceana and other groups like us really want to see our addiction to offshore drilling and our addiction to oil generally come to an end, because we know even less about what those ecosystems like and what the consequences would be in places like the Arctic or in places like the Pacific or the Atlantic, where there are proposals for new offshore drilling.
So true. Now look, if this oil slick or the undersea plumes get caught up in the loop current, as some predict, do you think coral and other marine species could be heard in Florida or even up the eastern seaboard? Is that possible?
I think the answer is yes, it's possible. It becomes less likely as you travel up the coast. simply because of the nature of the currents. You know, you'd have to have combinations of relatively unlikely things happen to have it get pushed in towards, say, the Chesapeake Bay or that area, once, because the current is fundamentally going to be heading out, main part of the current is going to be heading out to sea and across the Atlantic as the Gulf Stream. But yes, I mean, the Florida Keys are at risk as the current comes around. If the oil gets entrained in the loop current and it goes there relatively rapidly, you could see impacts on the coral reefs there. And similarly around the southeast corner of Florida. And again, hopefully less likely up the east coast of the U.S. as the currents take the residual oil out to sea. The good news is on that front that the longer the oil stays in the Gulf and bakes in the sun and, you know, isn't hit by a hurricane, the more it's going to weather, which means that the volatile pieces like the methane and, you know, like other, like the gasoline or the jet fuel fractions of the oil, they're going to evaporate off, and a lot of the rest of it has the chance to be chewed up by the bacteria. So instead of having lots of very, very nasty and immediately toxic liquid or sticky oil like we're seeing in the Gulf, you're more likely to see tar balls, which are not good by any means, but are not as bad as the oil in the Gulf. Of course, what that means is that you either get it quickly in the Keys or and on the East Coast, or it stays in the Gulf and it hurts the Gulf for a longer period of time. There's no win there.
Right. This is Radio EcoShock talking with Dr. Mike Hirschfield, chief scientist at the nonprofit conservation group Oceana. Mike, what is your appraisal of the latest efforts to contain or clean up the big leak in the Gulf? Can you give us a quick update?
Yeah, the short answer is, as we've seen, once the oil's in the water and once it's spewing forth a mile down, there's no good solutions. It looks like some of the efforts to cap or put a cap on the well and siphon some of the oil up to the surface, that those efforts are succeeding to a significant extent. Of course, the amount of oil that isn't being captured is now acknowledged to be greater than the total amount that was estimated to be coming out at the beginning. So, you know, we're ahead of where we might be, but we're still seeing staggering amounts of oil coming out on a daily basis. The best ultimate solution now remains getting a relief well down to hit the spot where the original well reached, and that's not estimated to happen until perhaps, you know, the beginning of August as a successful effort. And, you know, there's no guarantees that it will hit the first time or the second time.
Right. Well, as we're wrapping up, I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to add for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I guess I would say is it's really important for all of us when we're wrestling with the question, what can I do, which all of us are feeling, what can I do to help in the Gulf, to recognize that the biggest help that we can do for the creatures in the Gulf, for the people in the Gulf, in the long run, is to curb our oil habit. And whether it's think twice before driving that extra mile or setting your thermostat in the winter just a little bit higher, if you've got an oil furnace, you might want to set it just a little bit cooler. But also to tell your elected officials really that we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore, and we want them to stop offshore drilling and get us off of oil.
We have been talking with Dr. Mike Hirschfield, chief scientist at Oceana. Find out more at oceana.org. Thank you so much, Mike, for your time today.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.